Accession number 28462, Reel 6.
All right, for the moment. Do you want to stop? Or you, is...
Do you want to change over?
No, no, I'm doing fine. I think we've got another half reel. Anyway, we'll press on. So yeah. This is Ian Templer, Reel 6.
Yeah.
So you fly back, so back to your base in Egypt.
Yeah, I got back to Alexandria then. And
back to Alexandria, yeah.
And then...
still without your planes, presumably.
No, we hadn't got aeroplanes then. We went to... lost myself. Sorry. Oh, here we are. For some reason... Oh, here we are. Yes, I went back to... That's right, back to Cairo on the 26th of March. Then we went... We all had to go to Fayed, down on the Red Sea, where there was a naval air station there. And then we reformed into a 12 aircraft squadron. So we got a lot of new crew, we got new aeroplanes, and we did a bit of flying there.
What was the squadron called?
821. 821. That was 821 squadron. We reformed, really, having been reduced from... lost our CO and lost another couple of crews on that ferry trip. So we reformed with 12 aircraft and a new CO who was a Royal Marine captain. And April the 7th, we went back to Dakila. On April the 15th, we went up to a place called Martin Bagouche in the desert and operated from there.
I mean, Alexandria, your impressions of that, was this to come later or was this...
It would come later, because later we were actually stationed there.
All right. No, that was just because I'm quite interested to talk about that in the war. But anyway, let's go on now. So you've gone up to this base in the desert.
Yeah.
You've got new planes, new swordfish...
No, albacores we had there,
sorry.
Yeah. And, there we were occupied on anti-submarine patrols, standing by for attacks on convoys. Night of April 22nd, 23rd, we went looking for a ship, couldn't find it. And we bombed a camp and went back to Sidi Barani for some reason. And then we went back to our own base at Bagouche. And all this went on, anti-submarine patrols.
Do you remember of those patrols? I mean, you just...
They were just flying over the sea looking for anything that might be there. I think that as much as anything, they were designed to keep enemy submarines under the water.
And you were... This, of course, you had RT by this time, so you were in...
No, I
still not.
No. WT, that was all we had.
I see. Yeah. Right.
No, in fact, I didn't fly anything with RT until we got American aircraft much later. So, we did various operations. We did a mine-laying operation to Derna. Bombings, mine laying. Oh, when the night Tobruk fell, we went and dropped mines there, two nights running. That was quite strange, really, because we thought it's bound to be heavily defended. And obviously, the Germans, having got Tobruk, they'd want to use the port. And they would make sure that nobody came and disturbed that idea. So we flew out. It was about 45 minutes, an hour, I suppose, thinking, what are we going to be met with? And there was absolutely nothing. And we all dropped our mines in the right place, two nights running, and they didn't fire a shot at us. So that was very lucky.
And dropping mines, was that a different science to dropping bombs? Or
different to dropping bombs, similar to dropping torpedoes, except that you weren't aiming at anything. You just got one sort of small area where you wanted to put the mine, mainly in a harbour entrance, was the best place to put it. And that wasn't difficult to hit the spot. It would have been under intense opposition, but as I say, we were very lucky there wasn't any.
And the mines are not on parachutes?
No, they just dropped straight in. Yes, they were usually magnetic mines.
I think this is just about to come to an end.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go on with this one to look down and swap it over.
Okay.
You talk about this as slightly humdrum. Maybe was it? It was a period where you were flying sorties and.
Well, you got used to it, a sort of routine, and.
You were working from a desert forward desert airport.
Forward desert airport, yes.
Living we had tents.
A tented camp, yeah.
And how was that? What was it like? Temperatures up to well, the 40s, I suppose.
Yes, the temperatures are very high. I mean, normally, that sort of temperature, you wouldn't think of wearing gloves, but you got into an aircraft, you'd been standing in the sun for 3 or 4 hours, everything was too hot to touch, so you had to wear leather gloves for that, until at least you got in the air and got things cooled down a bit. We had quite a comfortable mess, actually. We were very lucky because we were able to get supplies through of food and drink, particularly bottles of beer, which we used to... Somebody had the technique of cutting a bottle of beer down to make a glass out of it. And you filled it with engine oil and then gave it a sharp clout. And with any luck, it broke off clean. But we were able to get supplies of ice even. The worst thing there was flies. And they were a nuisance because all food always had to be covered up until you were actually able to eat it. It was also cold at night. And I shared a tent with my observer, but we had to dig a sort of hollow in it, sort of, so that it was like a slip trench, and that was hard work. But fortunately, we weren't ever attacked there, so life wasn't too bad.
And the aircraft were outside, under camouflage?
They were dispersed. Well, they were desert camouflage, yes, but though they weren't in any... In Malta, of course, they were in blast pens, but we didn't have that. They were dispersed quite well. But we were... Where we were, I don't remember that we were attacked at all.
And, I mean, enemy air activity, that was it was likely that you might be jumped when you were flying, or...?
Well, you always looked out for it, but we never were. We were... One occasion, there was an Italian twin-engined... I suppose it was a fighter. It was behind us, and I was told that it was coming up, and I said, well, tell me when it's close and I'll turn around, take a pot shot at it. And he never did. And I got turned around very tight and just got it in my sights and fired my front gun. It didn't work. They were very unreliable.
What kind of guns were they? They were.
It was a Browning. The front gun was a Browning machine gun. I'm not sure what we had in the back. It was probably a Browning as well. What was they? They did have... It doesn't say what they had. The albacore. No.
And how did the aircraft put up to desert, being in the desert, the sand, the heat?
Oh, pretty well, actually. We had one or two engine failures, but they were usually because of oil pressure failing. Whether that was due to dust and heat, I don't know. But they did have special filters for keeping the sand out of the engine. And the sand wasn't too much trouble unless it really blew up into a sandstorm. Then it wasn't nice at all. I vaguely remember it happening once or twice. But,
well, going through one on the ground or flying through one?
On the ground, yeah.
You wouldn't want to fly through one.
I don't think I ever flew through one, no.
So now we are... What time are we in now?
We're in June 1942... And we are at about the point where the army retreated to the Alamein line. in the middle of one night, we heard this noise of vehicles coming right through our camp. And there was the army in full retreat. And we were told that we ought to pack our bags and get out. So when it had all calmed down a bit, we did that and went back towards Alexandria a bit to another sort of landing ground where we stopped. And by that time, it was difficult. Our CO couldn't get in touch with his headquarters. So we didn't really know what we were supposed to do. And we sat in the sun all day, and even I think we even had a bathe in the sea and had a meal. And eventually, we got word that, we should, as soon as it was dark, we should take off and try and find targets to bomb, because the Rommel's army used to sort of congregate at night, and you'd get great sort of splodges of vehicles, which made quite a good target. And so we did discover, when it was about dusk, that we saw one of our scout cars going down the road, and they said, well, the Germans are 5 miles away. So our CO said, well, it's dark enough now for us to go. We'll go. So we took off. We had the flare path on. We took off. And as the last aircraft took off, the flare path was picked up and bunged in the back of a lorry, which went off to Alex. And we did our, found some targets.
Ian Templer, continuation of Reel 6, 20 minutes to go. And so you've taken off, you've bombed the advanced part of Rommel's army bivouacking in the desert at night.
Yes.
And by the time you've gone back, your flare path has been rolled up, yes, and taken back. And you know presumably where you're heading back to.
We're heading back to Dakila, to the naval air station there, where we stayed and operated from there for some considerable time. Let's see. That's right, yes. July the 1st, we were there. Now, by this time, the Alamein line was being formed. Montgomery was coming out, and nobody was going to move an inch further back. So Rommel, the Afrika Korps, were steadily advancing, and they, at night, they sort of had, what do you call, Ligas or something, their tanks and vehicles were encamped in little sort of blobs all over the desert. And we had the role then of going out and finding targets and bombing them.
At night?
At night. We operated with a sister squadron of albacores on alternate nights. We'd go out one night, they'd go out the next. It's got quite a routine, actually. So we had fly one night. The next day we'd be on the ground. And probably in the afternoon we'd go into Alexandria, play tennis at the sporting club, have a night out on the town, come back, and the next day we'd be back on the flying rotor again. So this went on. The other thing we did was we really did a sort of pathfinder job. The RAF were stationed down on the Red Sea with Wellingtons. We used to go out one at a time with 48 flares, find a target. We'd drop the odd flare. When we could see that there was a target there, we'd drop three or four more, and the Wellingtons would come in and drop bombs on them, on what was under the flares. So this went on for quite a while. We lost one crew with a collision with a Wellington, unfortunately. One of them must have been at the wrong height. The pilot was able to get out and was taken prisoner.
How well suited were albacores to that kind of...
Very work? Well suited, because because they could carry a good load of flares. I mean, I think it was 48 flares we carried, and we also carried six 250-pound bombs.
And the flares were like little bomblets, I suppose, were they? They were carried in a bomb bay?
They were carried on racks under the wings. They were like long cylinders, really.
And you could release them four at a time.
Oh, yes, you could release whatever you wanted. And so we used to do that. Then we let the Wellingtons bomb. Then we'd find a target to drop our own bombs on and go back to base.
And with this, it was a fairly movable feast, the front line at that time, wasn't it? I mean, were you never worried that maybe this was, you're damn sure that the target below was enemy?
Well, we were warned once or twice that we must be sure we didn't illuminate behind a line, a certain line, because it may have been that there was an army patrol going out. But I think one of the reasons why they got us to do that was because the naval navigators were so good. And I mean, there were no landmarks in the desert, so you had to be really accurate as to where you took your departure point from, with the course you were steering and the speed you were doing, to be sure you were going to the right spot. Because they used to send a fighter out at dusk to find out where the targets were likely to be. Then after dark, we'd go and illuminate them. And we'd do it all night. You see, one would go as soon as it was dark. He'd be out for about between 1 and 2 hours, probably, or even 3 hours. So I've got 3 hours, 1 hour 45, that sort of time. And then the next one would be already there. When you returned to home, the next one would be already there doing it all over again. So, and there was a signal interrupted. I was told, Rommel sent a signal, we are being bombed all night by albacores, of which the British seem to have a bottomless pit.
And you only had one loss from collision. What about enemy aircraft?
No sign of them. The only, what they did do, they used to bomb Alex sometimes, but then when they got bow fighters out there, they very soon got rid of them. And that was another sort of example of getting command of the air.
And what about enemy intelligence as well? Because Alexandria was a melting pot.
Oh, yes, gosh, you had to be very careful what you said. There was one period when it looked as though the Africa Corps might get to Alexandria. We all had to go, if we wanted to go into Alexandria, we had to be armed, we had to carry revolvers. But nothing happened in the end.
Can you remember?
But there were a lot of people in Alexandria who were getting ready to welcome the Germans. But I didn't meet any of them.
and the nightlife side of it, it was teeming with soldiers, I imagine.
Oh, yes, the place was teeming.
Clubs and
soldiers and Air Force and Navy.
Gosh.
And all the restaurants.
Egyptian
and
girls chasing the men. And
the belly dancers.
And I mean,
actually, I had one of my friends, or two of them, met two girls, a Greek girl and a French girl. And they used to go to a police headquarters who held a sort of dance every night. It was like a dance hall, really. And one of these chaps, unfortunately, got the chop in the desert. And I was asked to go with the other one to make up the four. And it was very pleasant, actually. They were very nice. And I went to this French girl's house, actually, on one night, because she laddered a stocking and said, I'll have to go home and change it. So I had to take her in a taxi and met her family at the time. They were charming.
So they were French?
They were French, living
in Alexandria.
And they'd lived there for a long time, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, she was rather nice, actually. I've got a photograph of her here. As a matter of interest. Yes, that's a bit farther back. Isn't it funny, you know, where things are? You can never find them when you want them.
When you want them, yeah, like policemen.
Yeah. That, as a matter of interest, is the aircraft that I flew to Malta.
I see.
Nice bit of archive.
Indeed.
Anyway, that was that story.
So you had this, I mean, I was just curious about the contrasting life that you must have led, because you're flying missions one day, the next day you're playing tennis. With surrounded by flunkies and...
And having a nice night out.
Yeah.
Yes, it did seem strange.
But you kind of
got used to it, and that was it. That was the life.
And how did, say, the men, the fishers, how did they all cope with this? I mean, people sustained themselves. It must have been very exotic to them, but no one went down with the desert nerves or whatever. Or
not that. No, one or two. We did have a horrible thing. Oh, there she is. That one.
Oh, isn't she lovely?
Yeah.
Gosh, I wonder where she is now.
Yeah. she'll be getting on in years now.
And Sylph. Where are you? Are you in that picture?
Yeah. That's me, I think.
Looking like the cat that's got the cream.
Yeah. Anyway. I think probably the worst thing was Chippy Tummy, if you've been in those areas, you know. But I managed to get malaria. So that was while we were still stationed at Dakila, September the 7th to October the 12th, I was in hospital. And of course, it wasn't a malarial area. And I went down with this fever. And I thought, oh, it's just an attack of jippy tummy. It'll be gone in 48 hours. But it dragged on and dragged on and dragged on. I really felt dreadful. And eventually I got our doctor and I said, look, for God's sake, get me into hospital, which he duly did. And I went into the big military hospital in Alexandria. I think it was the 94th General, I think that's what it was called. Well, that might have been Malta. And I was lying on a stretcher in the hallway for about 2 hours before they did anything. And they eventually got me into a bed, and the matron came round and said, this man looks terrible. I said, he is terrible. He's bloody awful. So she said, well, give him some aspirin or whatever it was, codeine, that put me to sleep. And anyway, they had for about 5 days, they took blood tests from me to find out what it was. Because being a non-malarial area, it wasn't recognised, although there had been about half a dozen other cases. Anyway, after about 5 days, the orderly suddenly appeared with a mosquito net, put it round my bed. I said, what's that for? He said, well, you've got malaria. I said, well, I haven't got it now. it had subsided.
So they treated you with quinine or...?
Oh, I forget what they did. They just let me go. Then I went to a very nice convalescent home for a fortnight.
Where was that?
In Alexandria. It was the Scottish Red Cross, I think. It was a beautiful place, and we had very comfortable time. We were allowed out. We used, as long as we were back by 10 o'clock at night. And we were there for about a fortnight. And then I went back to... that was the place.
Oh, lovely, yes. I can just...
These days it would be in colour.
Yes. These days, that building's in ruin.
Because it's very
Alexandria
nice.
Has really gone downhill, but anyway.
Anyway, I went back to to Dakila and went to the MO there to get passed out for flying. He said, no, no way you're going flying. You've got to have another week off. So I had to go to my CO and say, well, I've been told to another week off. He wasn't very pleased. Rightly so, because I felt fine then, but they weren't going to take any chances. So I went back into Alexandria and booked myself in at the Union Club for a week and just loafed around. Then back to October the 12th, I was back flying again.
This was a time when there was I mean, the Germans weren't far away. There was a possibility.
They weren't far. They were 75 miles away.
Exactly. Mm. So, I mean, was the squadron kept absolutely, you know, ready to go?
Yes, we were kept busy doing that same illuminations and bombarding. We did two or three operations of spotting for bombardments at... I got one at Mersa Matru was one I went to. We went up to Rhodes. No, went up to... Cyprus, in the middle of August, this was before I went down the area, to do a... It was a diversion for the big Malta convoy, which was called Pedestal. There was a diversion in the eastern Mediterranean, and one part of it was a bombardment on Rhodes, for which we had to spot. And we went up to Cyprus for that, to take off from there. And I didn't actually do the whole operation because... The aircraft I had was using too much fuel, and if we went and did the spotting, we wouldn't have got back to Cyprus. So the CEO said, well, come for half an hour, and if we're all okay, you can go home. So that was that one.
But how far away is Cyprus from your airport? Your
well, from
base?
Where we were at Paphos, actually. It must have been 3 hours at least.
But to get to Paphos, so I'm just...
Oh, from...
So you went from Alexandria, up to...
Oh, we flew up. I think we refuelled at... we refuelled at Acre. So it was, in fact, from... The whole way was... 3 hours, 25... 5 hours, 45... So we refueled at Acre and then went on to Cyprus. It was a total of 5 hours, 45. Hmm. And at, 90 miles an hour? 500 miles?
Not like flying to Malta. I mean, it wasn't as nearly as far as
that. No, it wasn't as long as that, no.
Yeah, sure.
And it was daylight, too.
Yeah. So you've done that. So now you're back in... we're back. You've come out of hospital with malaria. You're in the... desert again, flying, spotting.
No, we didn't go back to the desert because you see the line was only 75 miles away, so we operated from Dakila, from Alexandria.
Right.
And we had one little incident there. A chap joined the squadron. He was an RN lieutenant, and I'd always sort of thought, well, there can't be anything wrong with their navigation. So we went off quite happily on a sweep to Salum. And then we had to go out to sea and then back to base. And it should have been, I think, about 4.5 hours. And after about 3 or 3.5 hours, I said to John Knott, isn't it about time we were returning? Hitting the last lap, turning onto our last leg. He said, well, I don't know where we are. I said, well, we're over the sea, mate. And he, I don't know what he'd done, but he got lost. So I decided the only thing to do was to turn round, fly sort of southeast till I hit the African coast. I mean, I knew the African coast was going to be there somewhere. So, well, I hit that and see if I can recognise where we are. And eventually, of course, found it and kind of kept out to sea a bit further away from unfriendly people and just flew due east to Alexandria. But this aircraft had been using more fuel than it should have been. And about an hour from base, the fuel gauge was registering nothing.
Oof.
Well, I mean, I knew there was a reserve, but how much I didn't know, and I should have known. So we sort of soldiered on, trying to fly at the best optimal speed for use of fuel, and got nearer and nearer base, and got to the point where I thought, well, if I try and land in the conventional way into the wind, I've got to go inland. I've got to come in over a rocky escarpment and I might well get caught out. So what I'll do, I'll stay on the upwind side of the landing ground. If the engine cuts before I can get onto the ground, I'll ditch on the beach. Hopefully ditch in shallow water and we'll get out. And so as we approached, we were firing distress signals. And I thought, well, surely there'll be a flare path any minute now. Not a bloody dicky bird. I don't know what was wrong on the ground. So anyway, we were still coming in with plenty of height. And I was just about to turn into the wind so as to ditch in the sea when the moon came out from behind a cloud and the runway was straight in front of me like that. So I lost the height quickly and got down. With the engine had stopped by then altogether. Just before I turned, the engine had stopped, and that was the point where I said, I've got to ditch. And we hit the ground. There wasn't much wind, fortunately, because it was a downwind landing, which means that you're inclined to be blown along the ground a bit. And we came to a halt all in one piece. And